And now we open up the pages of the Washington Post magazine, which we do just about every week, to find interesting stories about the way we live, or the way we used to live, as was revealed this week in a story about the early days of one of this country's most beloved football teams, the Washington Redskins. Samu Qureshi knows the team's inside story. He calls himself one of the Redskins' most devoted fans and historians. He also owns what is believed to be one of the largest collections of Redskins memorabilia, including hundreds of letters that reveal as much about the team's early days as they do the zeitgeist of the time. And he wrote about all that for this week's Washington Post magazine, and he joins us now. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Well, the story you tell begins in 1932. That's when George Preston Marshall bought an NFL franchise and put it in Boston. His team was called the Braves at first, but he later renamed them the Redskins. Just tell us a little bit about the early years. What was it like being part of that team?
It was a very difficult time for the league, and really up until, I'd say, 1958, you know, the survival of the league was in question. And so really, I think for most players, it was basically a job, and sometimes people got better jobs. Sometimes people just quit because they got a higher paying job as a teacher or as an assistant coach at a college. One of the greatest running backs of the time, actually from the 1930s, who was with the Boston franchise from 32 to 36 and then with the championship Washington Redskins in 37, was Cliff Battles. And he ended up retiring over a contract dispute of $500 with Marshall. And he was literally the best running back in the league at the time. And if they had held on to him, they probably would have a couple more championships under their belt.
I was interested in all the letters over salary negotiations. It does speak to a very different time. Players negotiating for themselves and saying, well, I need a raise because I just bought a house.
Just for their day-to-day expenses.
Just for their day-to-day expenses and the kind of the paternalism. Well, I'll send your wife, you know, $200 to help
her
out.
Sure, yeah, no, it was a very tough time. I mean, these guys, I mean, for really until the 1970s, they were still working second jobs during the off season.
And this was physically punishing. I think people forget that they didn't have the safety equipment that is required today, and the job is still considered a dangerous job.
And also the rules were also much more conducive towards higher levels of violence. I mean, they protect the players much more. Now the players are, you know, bigger and faster, certainly, but back then they were taking some serious hits.
You write that George Marshall, who was from West Virginia, saw himself as a Southerner. He was a segregationist. He refused to bring on black players. The NFL integrated in 1946, but by 1955, the Redskins were still the only team not to have a black player. What was his problem?
Yeah, if he was still alive and the owner, they might still not have a black player. I mean, it was pretty crazy. I mean, they paid a big price for it. They were finally forced to integrate in 1962. The Kennedy administration was on them in 61, led by Stuart Udall, the Interior Secretary. And the Redskins had just signed a 30-year lease for the new stadium, which was to become RFK Stadium. At the time, it was called DC Stadium. But Udall and the Interior Department threatened to break the lease if they didn't integrate. And they basically gave them one extra year then, because Marshall was being very combative about it. And he was, you know, basically saying that he'd go toe-to-toe with John F. Kennedy, like he used to go with his father Joe, you know, up in Boston and so forth. So, you know, there were demonstrations over it, and you know, people were pretty up in arms, and they were so far behind baseball. They might have been a little bit ahead of some of the local country clubs, but that's about all. So,
what was his problem? I mean, he just didn't like black people.
I haven't really been able to find what the core of it was. And I guess some people are prejudiced against different groups, and who knows why. There's also a conception that the name is discriminatory. But I will say, in the Redskins' defense, I don't think it was ever intended to offend, and not that that doesn't absolve them of their responsibility. I mean, there's no question that Marshall was discriminatory against black people, but they actually had Native Americans on the team, on the Boston Redskins team in the 1930s. I mean, full-blooded Native Americans, and they had a Native American head coach as well. So it's hard to say that, you know, that they were trying to be offensive. And I certainly, you know, I don't see why you would name your team an offensive name, you know, a derogatory name of a particular group.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with Samu Qureshi. He is, how should we put it, one of the world's biggest Redskins fans. He has one of the largest collections of Redskins memorabilia, and he wrote about it in this week's Washington Post magazine. What does it take to be a collector of this magnitude?
I think it takes a certain level of obsession and it takes a love. I mean, I just have a great love for the team, but I became obsessed initially with collecting football and baseball cards. And then, you know, it just later became anything related to the Redskins. And so I literally collect everything related to the Redskins.
How many items do you have? Do you even know?
That's a question I absolutely can't answer. I mean, I can tell you I have over 1,000 different Redskin programs. I have, you know, several hundred game used jerseys. I have literally tens of thousands of different cards.
It takes up how much space in your house? Do you have a separate house for it?
Almost. I need a separate house. I need a separate larger house than what I live in. But it takes up the entire lower level, which is about 2,000 square feet of my house. And
presumably your wife is on board with this.
She's hanging in there. She's a great lady. She's pretty much drawn the line that, hey, it doesn't creep up the stairs.
Okay, the stairs is the...
the stairs is the max.
Max. What is your most prized item and why?
One that I'm really fond of is the 1937 team signed ball. And I really like that one because, first of all, it was their first year in Washington. It was a championship year. It was their first world championship. And the ball's in pristine condition. It's got all the team members on it, and they all signed their colleges underneath them, which is also an indication of how popular college football was back then, that it really mattered where you went to school. And it's just a neat relic for me because it's something that I know everyone on the team held this ball and signed it, and it's kind of encapsulated in time forever.
What do you think is like the weirdest thing in your collection that people would think, why would you have that?
Oh boy, that would definitely be John Riggins' jockstrap.
I'm sorry I asked. Samu Qureshi is a devoted collector and historian of the Washington Redskins. He and his wife, Valerie Grissom, wrote about the team's early days in this week's Washington Post magazine. You can find that story and read it in its entirety and learn more about Qureshi's massive collection of Washington Redskins memorabilia on our website. Just go to thenewnpr.org, which now offers free transcripts and lots of other cool features. Go to Programs and click on Tell Me More. Samu Qureshi, thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.